It's here and now. While I've been guest hosting here in Boston, I've been thinking a lot about transportation. I usually take public transport to work in Washington, but my route would take a lot longer here, so I've been using ride-sharing apps like Uber and Lyft, and I can get to the office in 10 minutes. I'm apparently part of a growing trend. Federal data shows that over the last decade, per capita miles driven in personal cars has been on the decline. People also have new options to help them get around. Uber, Lyft, short-term car hire services like Zipcar, bike sharing services, and apps that track public transportation. We wanted to bring in a transportation expert to look at how new technologies and new lifestyles are reshaping American cities. Gabe Klein is the former transportation commissioner in Chicago and Washington, D.C., and he's also a former executive at Zipcar. He's now a venture capitalist focused on transportation startups, and he's the author of the new book, Startup City. Gabe, welcome to Here and Now.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Indira.
So, Gabe, we both live in Washington, D.C., and in the past few years, I've observed the number of bike lanes and public bike share stations has grown exponentially. There must be three places to borrow a city bike within a mile of my house. Is this unique to the capital, or have major cities across the country gotten to the point where transportation can be done without a car in mind?
Well, it's not unique to the Capitol, but I will say that Washington, D.C. has become a national leader over the last decade in transportation and also in land use policy. And I know some people are probably saying, well, what is land use policy? Well, it's thinking about what is the relationship between where people live, all the services that they desire, where they work, and how they get there. And, you know, old cities like Washington, New York City, Boston, for instance, also on the West Coast, San Francisco, Seattle, they've really led the way because they have the built environment that works very well with walking, biking, and taking transit.
All right. So what happens with city planning if we are actually able to reduce the role of cars? Do parking garages get repurposed for urban farmland, or can lanes that are now used for cars be used for pedestrians or parks? I'm thinking of the High Line in New York City, an old rail that was transformed into a walking area. Where have you seen this?
Yeah, so we did that in Chicago with the Bloomingdale Trail, which now serves people walking and biking through five neighborhoods. And I guess really what I'm excited about with all of this technology that's coming is the ability to reallocate space back to people. You know, it's not that all cars are bad, but it's that cars used all the time for every trip, and the majority of trips in cities are under 3 miles, is not a good thing. And so what we've been able to do is use, I would say, more carrots than sticks in Washington, D.C. than in Chicago, where I worked, and also other cities, to give people as many layers of transportation options as possible so they can make better choices, make them as inexpensive as possible. Like bike share, you know, cost people in D.C. 28 cents a day to use. That's a lot cheaper than the full societal cost of driving, which is about $9.20 per mile when you add everything in, including the healthcare costs that result from a more sedentary lifestyle. And so, you know, one of the things that DC has done so well is transit-oriented development and really prioritizing building dense, multi-purpose, mixed-use buildings around transit stops, and it's been very successful.
One thing I've noticed is the association between these densely populated new apartment buildings and protected bike lanes. Mm-hmm. And you talk about how you were inspired by Montreal. What did you see there that you were able to bring to both D.C. and Chicago?
We realized after New York City started putting in some bike lanes and Montreal that were really separated from cars, that we could get regular people on bikes, including, in particular, women and children.
One of your critics in Chicago called the city bike share program there a sign of gentry liberalism, the idea of public resources going towards improving the lives of what they call the bike riding bourgeoisie instead of addressing those with a much greater need for improved public transit. In other words, the city's poor. What do you say to that?
Well, honestly, I think that's ridiculous. And to be honest, it's the great equalizer because it costs nearly nothing to use and there's no emissions. And so we feel actually that it's important to put bike share stations and bike lanes in all neighborhoods. What's happened is the less dense, more suburban areas of a city or the actual suburbs are becoming more of the ghettos, right? And the central city, the densest areas with the most services closest to where people live, are becoming very expensive. Now, also in that land use pattern, shared mobility services, whether it be Uber and Lyft or Zipcar, which I was a part of, or bike share, work really well in those dense areas. So typically you're going to start there. But like here in D.C., we launched them into southeast D.C. neighborhoods that are less dense, lower income from the get-go. But those stations were not utilized as much at the beginning. And they still probably aren't. You need to give people a plethora of options that help them to get rid of their second car or their first car. You know, in Southeast DC, people are spending up to 53% of their income on transportation. And it's just not fair.
Well, let me ask you about that, because we often speak about poor people who sometimes lose their jobs because of transportation problems. They're unable to get to work and then they lose their job. So how do you crack the dependency on having a personal car if public transport is still so weak?
Right. The typical metropolitan area resident can reach 30% of the jobs in their area within 90 minutes on public transit. In D.C., it happened, and New York, it's 37%. In places like Miami, it's 16%. And so we need to do a much better job of providing, and we need to make bigger investments in high-quality public transportation services. And all of these new business models like Uber, Lyft, Zipcar, Car2Go, autonomous vehicles that are coming, they need to plug in the gaps and be utilized for the first and last mile. But we cannot disinvest in high-quality public transportation.
All right. Well, we now know that there are so many apps out there that help you see when the next bus or train is coming. But all the apps in the world will not help if public transportation is still underfunded and your bus or train is coming only once or twice an hour. As a former transportation commissioner in two major cities, what do you say to that? It's a week when the transportation bill is up on Capitol Hill, not far from where you are right now.
Right, right. And look, it's great that we're going to get a long-term bill. It's unfortunate that it's still biased towards funding roads and highways, where the return on investment is very small. The return on investment is considerably higher with transit, and you also create sustainable jobs for people. I mean, ideally, what people want is to have, you know, most of the services that they need within 5 to 10 minutes walk, and they'd like to be able to commute within 30 to 40 minutes by public transit, walking or biking.
So how far away is that? When is that happening?
Well, I think it depends on where you live. The situation is very different in Houston or Dallas than it is in San Francisco or D.C. And I would say we have great models. If you look to some of the Asian countries and the northern European countries, like in Copenhagen, there's 180% tax on buying a single occupancy vehicle. So people don't do it. I mean, a Toyota Camry is like $80,000 there. We have excellent models in terms of how to fund dense urban living and public transportation, as well as walking and biking. In Asia, they spend 8 to 9% of GDP on infrastructure and transportation. In Europe, 5 to 6%. We spend 2 to 3%, and we are paying the price for it. And the return on investment on a bike lane is 60 times what you get for building a highway lane. And it's a lot less expensive.
Well, you're also a big proponent of ride sharing, whether it's Uber or Lyft or Zipcar or even driverless cars. But those are all still cars. So how does that solve the fundamental problems of traffic and the burden on our crumbling infrastructure?
So I have a few issues with cars. I mean, the number one killer of teenagers in the United States is not disease or guns. It's car crashes. And the other issue I have is with the environment and what we're doing to it. So with electric, autonomous, shared vehicles, I think we would have a nice alternative to single occupancy vehicles. Does that mean that everybody should have their own pod? Absolutely not. It means that we should rely on walking, biking, and high quality transit. And then when we need to get somewhere in a vehicle, you know, my hope is that services like Lyft combined with the autonomous vehicle will give us a much safer way to get around. And we can also eliminate most of the emissions that come with it.
And reducing the number of cars in circulation.
We could get 85% of the cars off the road in cities, and that's just going to be a sea change.
Gabe Klein is a former transportation commissioner for Chicago and Washington, D.C., and author of the new book, Startup City. Gabe, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.